Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everybody. How are you? It's The Game on Sunday. Michael Lester here. Looking forward and backwards, as usual, as we do on the podcast, in the company of Tomás Mulcahy and Martin Carney. And good to have the two lads along, of course, again, to review everything and to look forward. When I say kind of review and look forward, gentlemen, and Martin in particular, because we've just had football over the weekend, looking at the permutations of where we're at the moment, it's nearly like Martin doing the leaving cert because don't remind me what I was reading a thing on the RTE sports app this morning, kind of one of their experts there was going through the whole thing, and God bless the man. He's obviously sat down and spent a long time figuring this thing out, because halfway through it I was lost, kind of, you know. Yeah. It doesn't seem too difficult to be lost, because, I mean, look, somebody's going to win the league and somebody's going to get promoted or relegated or whatever. But the combinations of it, Martin.
They're quite extraordinary. They're quite extraordinary, Michael. I mean, the only team, you know, any of, I suppose, three can go down. That's Tyrone, Roscommon and Monaghan. And, you know, if you look at the other side of the table, Derry are out in front on 8. Dublin, Mayo and Kerry then are all on 6, and Galway are on 5. Now, the next games are big ones for everybody. Galway and Dublin, I think it is, in Salt Hill on the 16th and 17th. And, like, if Galway win that, for example, they go up to 7 points, they go above Dublin, and they leave themselves actually then with a final game against Kerry in Killarney. But I don't see them reaching a league final, although win both, and it's possible they can. Then the Tyrone situation against Monaghan is critical for both, actually. If by chance Monaghan won that, they would leapfrog Tyrone on the basis of winning the head-to-head with them. And they could actually, you know, kind of, in a sense, carry out a great escape again on the last day, because they have to travel to Castlebar. At that stage, I think Mayo will be keen to maybe rest a number of players, because they're just a week out from championship in New York. And if Mayo are safe, Mayo will be safe, I believe myself, at that stage. And, you know, Monaghan have a lot to play for, actually, over the next two games. And they're not kind of, shall we say, necessarily doomed as yet. One team I was disappointed with the last day, and I saw the game up close, was Common. Now, I thought Roscommon in playing Monaghan looked impressive. Now, Monaghan were poor that day. But the last day in their game against Mayo, I thought Roscommon looked way off the pace by comparison with Mayo. And I wouldn't give them much chance in Hyde Park against Kerry in their next game. And I think myself, you know, their final game is against Derry in Celtic Park. I think they look likely, actually, to go down at the moment, unless something miraculous happens. Like, what amazed me the last night, or what I noticed the last night in their game with Mayo, the conditions were dire, first of all. You had a very, very, very heavy rain, and it was bitterly cold, Michael. You had the hands in your pocket in Salt Hill. I'll tell you, you wanted a duvet, you wanted nearly, honestly, you wanted nearly an igloo with you in Castlebar the last day out. It was so cold. But Monaghan's fitness levels, Monaghan's kind of appetite for the game was simply, it was eons below what Mayo brought to the table. And they showed no fight in the second half, which was a shame in many ways, because in the first half, Dermot Murtagh in particular gave an exhibition of long-range point kicking. But the air went out of the tyres completely. And if they kind of perform like that in their last two games, and I repeat, at home to Kerry and away to Derry, I think there's certainties for relegation. And
it's interesting, Martin, because, you know, and we've spoken about this in the past here on the podcast, and others have spoken about it. The fact that the league concludes so close to the championship.
Right. Yes.
Everybody wants to be in the top division. Of course they do. You know.
Yes.
But does everybody want to actually win it?
Michael, you know, I saw Martin Breheny, your good friend Martin, talking about this a couple of weeks ago in one of his, in a lonely piece he did. But he talked about, like, I mean, players want to go out to play games, want to win games, and want to kind of, shall we say, win trophies along the way. And, you know, winning the league is not to be something to be sneezed at. It's not something to be taken lightly. It's a great honour to achieve, Michael. And winning a league doesn't mean that you're going to have a poor championship. Yes, last year Mayo can kind of look at the proximity of league and first round as maybe one of the reasons why they didn't get maybe to the pitch that they'd like to have got to in their opening round against Roscommon. But I think any one of those teams, Derry, Dublin, Mayo, Kerry, or Galway, or even Tyrone for that matter, who are actually kind of mathematically still in a position to reach the league final, I think if they get there, they'll want to win it, Michael. Even though, like, Derry are all the time kind of talking about their championship, opening championship game against Donegal and that. But, you know, if you think of Dublin, Dublin will canter through, Leinster. And basically, the league gives them the levels of competition that they need to prepare for the All-Ireland series later on. And they will want to get to league final. They're closing games, like they're in Salt Hill the next day, but their final game at home against Tyrone, I think they'll do enough in those two games to qualify for a league final. And I think all players, all teams, irrespective of what is publicly stated, want to actually win a league.
I suppose Tomás, Harding side of things, it's different, obviously, because it's a smaller grouping, if you like, of counties and all that kind of stuff. And if you look at the two divisions, Division 1A, Division 1B, and all that, the counties you expect are up there at the top, like in Division 1A, Kilkenny, Clare, Wexford, etc., Division 1B, Limerick, Tip, Galway, you know. And it's more, I suppose, clear-cut, if you like.
Yeah, it is. It is probably more clear-cut, Michael. And look, I suppose the other side of it as well, and I kind of would disagree with Martin in one sense, right, unless you're carrying a very, very big panel, right, the risk of injury at this time of the year is fraught with danger. And you know, we're seeing more and more hamstrings. You see Mark Coleman last weekend. I think last year was an ice training session, fractured jaw. You know, that puts maybe his championship in serious doubt as well. And I know, look, this could happen any time. But yeah, look, you get to a certain point in the season where clearly Davy Fitz Oy is on championship. Right, he's without 12 and 13 players. Look at their performance in the last couple of weeks. There's been massive changes. The same with Cork. The consistency is coming from Limerick. It's coming from Tipperary, and it's coming from Clare and Kilkenny as well, right? So does Brian Long want to go on to a league semi-final and final and then go into a Munster Championship campaign the way it is and the way it's structured? I'm not so sure, Michael, to be honest with you, because there's a heavy, heavy price to pay if you're not right for your first Munster Championship campaign. And you can be going very, very well in a league campaign and saying you can take all the plaudits that you want. But when it comes, you can't beat Munster Championship. And when it comes to Cork having to go to Waterford and play Waterford below in Welsh Park, my God, is Davey going to be waiting there? Because he would feel that's an opportunity for a big, big scalp. And that's where it is in terms of league. Because, yeah, would you like to get to a final and win a league? Probably you do. When you get to a final, you probably say we have to go about winning it now, because losing, it maybe asks more questions. But of all the teams that are out there at the moment, I think Kilkenny are probably the same team that we've seen so many years, will want to win this league.
The thing about it is, and look, again, we're all repeating ourselves here about it, but the whole structure of the thing, where the league is almost, not almost, it's virtually clashing with the championship in terms of the whole structure of the GAA calendar, you know. And this, of course, comes back to the whole idea of freeing up a certain part of the calendar for club matches and championships and so on, which is totally understandable on one level, you know. But it just gets a bit messy at the end of the day.
Well, that's true, Michael. In a sense, we've talked about this thing of the way everything is shoehorned now into a very, very, very narrow time space. And basically, I concur with Tomás's comment about the hamstrings. We talked about them last week. The disease is still spreading. I saw, for example, at the end of the game the last night, Owen McLaughlin, who had a star game for Mayo, you know, you knew immediately coming to the end of the game when he pulled up that the hamstring had snapped on him. You look at the Dublin lad in the game against on Saturday, actually, against Derry. Same thing, another hamstring injury. And, like, if a player gets injured at this stage of the season, like in the second, third week of March, like, to all intents and purposes, he's gone until the very end of May, which essentially will probably preclude him from playing in any of the provincial games that are in front of him. And it's tough. It's very, very difficult in that respect. Like, the fact that the season, in order to accommodate a club county split, is kind of within a 6 month period. It allows no time frame for recovery.
I was listening, lads, last Sunday night, discussing some of this whole issue. Amos Fitzmaurice and Paul Flynn were on the GAA program on RTE and that kind of thing, and talking about, like, you know, these rule changes and all that kind of stuff, and talking about the fact that, you know, there should be tweaks, maybe, which is fine. I mean, tweaking things is great. But all these, like, almost revolutionary rule changes every 3 years, depending on maybe a vote in Congress or something like that, kind of, you know, is it doing Gaelic games any good?
Well, I suppose from a footballing point of view, I've seen the argument for it should be allowed to develop organically. And, you know, eventually it'll come back into an attacking template and a more open template that we have at the moment. Then you see other arguments, like, for example, you know, the dearth of goals in games and that. And why not do what rugby has done? That maybe, you know, put a new value on a goal, bring a goal up to 5 points. Would that encourage a little bit more of attacking football? Would it encourage a little bit more football that would be attractive to interest a spectator? Because the spectator appeal, the Gaelic football spectator appeal, isn't at the level that it ought to be. It's a marvellous, marvellous code, but I think it's too constricted. It's too kind of, shall we say, in the grasp of, you know, tactical templates in its structure and all of that. That, you know, I personally would love to see a change where maybe the hand pass is limited, where maybe you have to have a certain amount of players up the field. But I wouldn't go too much overboard, Michael. I'd be half in the camp, so to speak, of it will change organically as we go along, but certainly in the area of goal scoring. I'd love to see more goals. And as a reward of that, I'd love to see maybe a goal being worth 4 or 5 points. Like, for example, rugby changed over the years from a 3 point for a try to a 5 point for a try. And there was no outcry about it. And I have a sense that maybe the time is right, maybe, to try that in Gaelic sport, in Gaelic football, and basically see how it works.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Interesting point. Looking ahead, coming back to the reality, if you like, of where we're at the moment in this particular time of March, Tomás, and going forward, because we've had football over the weekend. We have hurling coming up next, a couple of really fascinating games in terms of where everybody stands. You mentioned Kilkenny, obviously, a moment ago there, you know, but I suppose when it's all put into the grinder, if you like, it'll be the teams, that the counties that you expect are going to emerge at the other end.
Yeah, and Michael, look, as we turn March, you know, you can get the smell of the grass being cut, right? Which is a good sign. Waking up this morning and it's bright and it's shiny, and you have a stretch in the evening, gives you the feeling, right? It's nearly time to be putting on the boots and tugging off, going to the field, and that's a bit of excitement, because we always say after Paddy's Day, look, real things begin to happen at that stage. And next weekend, look, you've massive, massive games. And the big one that stands out is obviously Limerick at Tipperary. And that was to be going ahead in the two Gaelic rounds, but unfortunately, the pitch is unavailable. I'm not so sure why it wasn't accommodated in Turles, in Central Stadium, but I believe that there's something there as well. Maybe they're keeping it for Championship. So the game has been transferred to Super Value Park Equid. You know, see the way I got Super Value in there, Mike. Yeah.
Good man. Shopping voucher.
Oh, yeah. I'll be going around with my trolley on Sunday in Paddington Glenmark. Yeah. So, yeah. And look, that's exciting. Saturday night matches, you know, I've been at the last one, Kilkenny and Park Equid as well. And hopefully, you're going to get a call from Limerick and Tipperary travel, because it's an occasion itself. Saturday night matches, the buzz about it. It's like a day out, a day's entertainment, whether you're going to a soccer international or rugby international. Saturday night has become kind of famous for these type of games over the last couple of weeks as well, and big crowds, you know. And like, that's the one thing, Martin, we've kind of said in terms of the cold, and you were on about hot water bottles there and electric blankets and igloos and everything above in Castlebar. But
you're all right, down south.
Yeah, the crowds, yeah, the sunny south, yeah. So the crowds are still travelling in big numbers, which is amazing, you know, for this time of the year. And it shows the one good thing that's there in terms of the GA is the appetite there, the hunger for the supporters and the followers to go in big numbers.
Yeah, like you look, for example, at the Derry-Dublin game the other day, again, you know, in your theme of the Saturday evening game, like, they got nearly a full house in Celtic Park, and the Dublin players afterwards just kind of were so complimentary about the venue and about the atmosphere in the place. And again, they had a huge travelling, you know, a huge following travelling with them. And on top of that, there was a very good turnout of Derry supporters. But I know from even this morning, and Michael would know Mick Byrne well, you know, public in here in town in Castlebar. Like Mick was just saying, like, again, what these Saturday nights mean in terms of the economy of towns. I mean, they're fantastic for towns, like they bring a crowd in and all of that kind of thing. And I mean, it just gives a great buzz, a Saturday night buzz to the place, with the centrepiece of the evening out being there, you know, whatever game that the spectators are going to.
It's interesting, like we called this podcast, gentlemen, the game on Sunday. But in actual fact, Martin, you're right. And Tomás, you're right in the sense that maybe we should just simply call it the game at the weekend, because genuinely, as you lads have been saying, like Sunday games, in actual fact, I heard a mumble or two from one or two people that they should even play games on Friday. I'm not sure if that would work, obviously.
Yeah, we're not changing the podcast, Michael. We're still saying the game on Sunday.
Okay, fine, Paul. Okay, I hear you. I don't want to confuse Tomás. You know, he's easily confused.
So. Incidentally, Michael, just a small little point. It's an aside from this. I enjoyed the little bit of, shall we say, a spark that you had in the Kerry Tyrone game at the weekend, where David Clifford became centrepiece of a little bit of a scalping and that. And it was more jersey pulling than anything. But the point I wanted to make in relation to all of that, Michael, was in 2014, mouthguards were made compulsory in GA. And I've noticed in the last number of weeks, in games, that a number of players aren't wearing them anymore. And I think the majority do, but there's a sizable number who put the mouth guard into their sock and don't wear it, actually. No, it's a serious point, actually.
Maybe there's a good few of them have false teeth, Micah or Martin.
well, that's the reason I have, because they don't use the mouthguard. But like, if you look at the history of them, in a sense, mouthguards came into American sport, I think, as far back as 1890, and the American Dental Association recommends them for 29 different sports. Now, in Gaelic football, as I said, they were introduced 10 years ago. The sanction, you know, referees are kind of a little bit, they're not particularly, shall we say, stringent in insisting on the mouthguard being worn. Now, the sanction is, if you are seen not to be wearing it, a referee just kind of gives you a warning. The second time, if he sees you during the game, you're still not in the mouth, then he issues you a yellow card. So are we coming close to a day when we're going to see a guy sent off for not wearing a mouth guard? It's just something that came to mind the other evening when I saw the skirmish between Kerry and Tyrone, and I said to myself, there's quite a number of fellas there not wearing mouth guards. Now, that's
are you sure that they're putting the mouth guards into their socks as opposed to their false teeth?
I would hope that it is right, because I wouldn't like to see the teeth biting the Achilles tendon.
If you're going to give a fella a punch in the mouth, Martin, as well, sure, there's no point doing it with a gum shield in, because it'll have no effect.
Is right. And again, in fairness to the mouth guards, so many of them nowadays are custom made, and basically it's hard to notice them. But I would say to myself that it's just a little thing, as I said when I saw the thing the other day, that it just caught my attention and I just wonder about it. But Michael, I take your point. The false teeth in the sock would be a rather nasty little thing if it went wrong, shall we say.
I suppose, Tomás, like in hurling, the thing back in the day that used to always fascinate me was hurlers just with their socks down, you know, who didn't wear shin pads. And because you know very well yourself, you can get a nice clip across the shins in the game. And I always said to myself, these lads are either awful brave or awful stupid, kind of, you know, because... You know,
well, Mike, I can assure you, right, at this time of the year, and you're playing January, February in National Hurling League matches, Jesus, you're cold enough going out onto the field, you know? And your warm-up was probably a run in the spot. Give 10 runs in the spot there of just warm-up and blow into your hands and maybe put on an extra top under the jersey. And out you go. And that was your warm-up. And imagine some fella coming along and he's going to pull on the ball, but he misses the slitter and tries to cross the ankle or across the shin or across the... Just under the knee, I can tell you something.
Leave it there now, no higher.
But in championship in the summer, that happens, you wouldn't even feel it. You'd just get on with it. I can tell you, January and February, Jesus, you would be giving some yelps out of you. I tell you, what a sore thing. Nothing worse. Yeah. And look, the helmet side of things, it was I never wore a helmet. You know, it wasn't compulsory back in our days. A lot of guys didn't wear helmets, you know, so...
And the downside of that, and I mean this seriously, Tomás, the downside of that is for the likes of myself, who loves hurling and who loves maybe wouldn't instantly recognize a player, that lack of recognition is increased by the fact that these guys have helmets on all the time. Absolutely. And I think it's a crying shame in many respects. I would love to see, again, maybe there is a rule in relation to it that they can have them off during the parades and that, or beforehand and all of that. But they I know the importance of them in terms of preventing head injuries or lessening the impact of head injuries. But nonetheless, from a point of view of facial recognition and that, it is kind of, shall we say, impacted in that way.
Yeah,
Are you suggesting, Martin, that others shouldn't wear helmets just so you can recognize them?
No, I'm not, Michael. But at the same time, I think it's just one of the lesser satisfactory aspects of the whole thing is that recognizing of players by youngsters and that, like, youngsters love recognizing a TG Reid and all of these. But when you're from this part of the world, you know, shall we say?
Yes. Martin, that would worry me. I definitely would want to wear a helmet when they go up that part of the world. Well, I'm wearing an electric blanket, but I'm wearing a helmet.
Yeah, of this part, certainly will be, I'd be asking, which side of the hurley do you hold, kind of thing. But anyway.
I remember Joe Rabbit, Galway star of the past, On a serious note, Galway playing Roscommon in one of those championship games back in the day when Galway were in the, in quotations, Connacht Championship and that kind of stuff, you know. And Joe got a serious injury up in Roscommon, you know, from a lad who just clearly wasn't up to that level of hurling.
Yeah.
You know, and hit him down the back of the head and like it did damage, you know, so.
Yeah. No, that's the danger of Michael, obviously. Like, I mean, it has been a force for good in that respect, in that it has lessened the number of serious head injuries and facial injuries that may have been the case in the past. And
Like Martin, but I'd still have concerns, like, in terms of this. Look, I mean, Mark Coleman getting a break or fracturing your jaw, and he's wearing a helmet. And
okay,
you know, so you've seen a lot of head collisions with guys. I mean, we've seen a couple of guys over the years, head collisions, and they're coming out and they're spitting blood. I presume the medical experts outside there, it is a must for the game. It is, there's no doubt about that, right? And it has improved the safety standard side of it, definitely. But I agree with your comments. Like, there was a couple of the Cork hurlers walked down the street in front of me. I probably wouldn't recognize them because I don't recognize them without their helmet, in terms of you don't see them. Every time I go to see them, the helmet is on when they come on to feed their bait. It's their warm up. It's there at a parade time and stuff like that as well. And I'd say even the younger generation themselves, right, you know, would struggle to recognize guys unless they're a super fan of theirs, right? But look, it is for the best reason, the best cause, really, you know. So,
I fully agree with that. I fully agree with that, Tomás. Yeah.
Yeah, and look,
it is, gentlemen. I think we're all agreed that that any safety device in any sport is incredibly important, you know. And look, it's there. And as you said, Martin, your point is valid about the gum shield and that kind of stuff. You know, if that's part of what's supposed to be worn, then, you know, that should be just simply it, kind of, you know. But I think a lot of players,
And again, I'm going back to the point, I'm not sure, is this machoism or what is it, you know, but a lot of players don't feel necessarily comfortable wearing the gear, you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, Michael. But I think the machoism that you had in another generation, I think it's less so nowadays. I mean, the way teams set up now, certainly in Gaelic football, you know, set themselves up, you know, inside their own 45-metre line with everybody kind of maybe manning particular part, area. And the hard tackling, the kind of the reckless tackling, I would call it, that you might have had maybe 20, 30 years and plus ago. And I don't think that's the case any longer. And you players, I think, without really realizing it, have a little bit more respect for the health of an opponent. And I mean that genuinely. And I mean, you rarely get guys going in with elbows, shall we say, into the head of a guy in front of them. And you don't see that much what I'd call hard tackling nowadays. And and as a consequence of that, you know, maybe players, like, you know, things that are maybe some guys with mouth guards in that don't feel themselves comfortable, can't breathe easily. In fact, there's a new mouth guard, I think, being patented in the United States at the moment, which fits into your lower jaw and which keeps your jaw aligned in the event of an impact, and which also, I think, withstands greater G-forces than had been the case in the past. But you're right, Michael. A lot of players don't feel kind of comfortable with this and maybe just try to get away with it, put it in the sock and basically carry on from there and hope that the referee doesn't bother them.
But
I remember back in the day, going back into the misty past, if you like, a championship match, hurling championship match between Cork and Tipperary. And Cork at the time, going back to the 60s here now, I have to say, Cork had a young team coming through and turned out to be a very successful team. But there was a lot of young players on it at the time. And they lined up against Tipperary in first round at the Munster Championship. And the great John Doyle was playing for Tip at the time.
Yeah.
One of his colleagues looked over and he said to him, "Well, John," he says, "what are we going to do with these young laddies, you know?"
Yeah.
And Doyle looked at him and he says, "Just lower the blades."
Lovely.
Yeah, that's
as I gather, no better man to do it.
Yeah, that was the model back then, Michael. That moves above the blade of grass, right? You know, so
yeah.
And look, I mean, we're talking about helmets. We had fellas wearing or playing in their bare feet back then as well,
that's
right? And look,
Babs Keating, remember?
That's my point, yeah. Right, you know, going playing and look. It was easy maybe standing his toes, like to upset him and stuff like that as well. But look, I mean, hurling is a game of skill, right? So if you go back to the time when fellas weren't wearing helmets, Michael, you had the odd occasion that you would come across a hatchet man, right? And a hatchet man, right? He mightn't see too much of the ball, but he would see the player in front and man ball and everything, right? But like, you've covered a lot of games over the years, Michael. Like, there was very little in terms of somebody flaking a fella down on top of the head by intentionally accident or something like that, and it was purely about skill. And I fear, in terms of the hurling helmets at the moment, guys are a bit braver in terms of the head contacts and stuff like that, because they have the face guard on them as well, right? You know, but some of the older guys I speak to now, Michael, will say, "Sure, why would I want a helmet? There's nobody pulling on a ball off the ear. There's nobody pulling on a ball on the ground. It's kind of very open. There's not too much marking. It's freestyle and stuff like that as well." But
that's an interesting point to us, because that conversation has come up in American football over the years, because they wear all the gear, you know, the helmets and the shoulder pads and all that, because they feel, to us, they have that sense, as you said a moment ago, that sense of protection. Some of the hits, like, are unbelievable, because and there are a lot of concussion injuries in American football because of that.
Yeah, and it's something that would worry me in terms of the hurling side of it, in terms of a guy being a bit braver because he has the helmet on him, right? And like the frontal charge or you know, running into a guy because he's protected with the helmet and stuff like that as well. Whereas you wouldn't if you weren't wearing one, and you'd be kind of the skill element would come into it a bit more in terms of actually avoiding getting a belt of a hurley and reading the game situation even a bit better as well. But look, it's there. Look, if you looked at another sport, isn't there massive, massive concern in terms of rugby, in terms of head injuries and rugby and where that's at as well. So look, I suppose we cannot go down the ground or go down that road in terms of hurling, right? Guys are very, very well protected with the safety standard, the helmet at the moment, and that has to remain to be the same, you know? Has to be.
I know, 100%. 100% does. No question about that. Let's look ahead. Tomás, hurling, obviously big games coming up that we mentioned. And Clare Kilkenny kind of catches the eye, of course, in Division 1A because they're top of the table, the two of them. So they both can't win, you know, so...
Look, I think Brian Lowen will be very, very happy the way the league campaign has gone. He's kind of he's been missing a couple of key stalwarts and kind of players that you would kind of say are the backbone of the Clare team. So he's trying out a lot of new guys, and he's still getting performances, which I think he's very, very happy with. And again, it's the style that Clare have. They've moved away from the very much sharp passing game. They've moved away from the very much from the Tony Kelly go back into defence and being the exit man out of defence, and he carrying the ball and he's supposed to be corner forward or centre forward. And they've gone a very much more a direct route. They've added a lot of physicality to their side as well. Jeez, Clare are a hard team to beat now, Michael. They're a hard nut to crack. And has Brian Lowen written all over it? I mean, if you look at him as a fullback, how good he was, how good a hurler he was, but physically strong. Jesus, if you were to go around Brian Lowen, you know you were going around him in some fashion, right? You know, and that's testament to him. And it's taken me a bit of time to get there. I mentioned maybe a couple of weeks back, people are fancying Clare maybe to be the ones that could actually upset Limerick's 5-in-a-row ambitions this year. They played very well against them in a lot of matches last year, and. A big test, Nolan Park, or Ennis. Kilkenny going to Ennis. Yeah, I mean, you're going to get a humdinger of a game there because you know Kilkenny are going to bring everything as well themselves. Kilkenny don't do anything different, Mike. They turn up at every match. They want to win every game. They'll put every effort into it, and they're going really, really well as well. And you've Galway versus Dublin after that. Galway going particularly well as well. Dublin... not so much. Donoghue going back to his old patch in Galway, and you'd expect Galway, you know, with Shefflin to be pushing on at this stage, be getting himself ready for a Leinster Championship campaign and getting back to maybe what he sees as his strongest 15. Some of the managers have used the league to change guys, to bring in other guys to see where they're at. But once you get into March, you start moving now, and Championship coming in April, you need to be getting yourself 15. You need to be getting close to 15 that you want to throw the Championship time. And I think that's the key here, you know, Michael, yeah.
You mentioned Galway, Dublin. I would expect tomorrow's Galway to win that because Dublin haven't been going great, obviously. But the big game in Division 1B, this is, of course, is Limerick and Tip. Both on 6 points, both top of the table. So somebody's going to lose it, presumably. And there could be a leapfrog there.
Yeah, there could be. And look, I suppose like you take the last day and you look at Limerick above and against Dublin in Croke Park, and you're saying 330, I think, is what they scored, Michael. Very, very high scoring for this time of the year. It was kind of freestyle hurling, probably under a bit of pressure for the first 20 minutes. But once they settled into their stride, they were just a joy to watch. And Tipperary are going along very, very nicely as well. Liam Cahill has given a lot of younger blood their opportunity. Liam Cahill was involved with two All-Ireland under-21 winning teams. He was involved with minor selections and stuff like that as well. So he has it in his own head. Maybe some of these guys didn't get a chance over the last 2 years, maybe under different management, or 2 or 3 years under different management. And he's given these guys their chance as well. So... Tip are going over. This is going to be a very interesting game because there is a serious rivalry between them, whether you like it or not. They just don't like each other in terms of when it comes to the hurling front. And it would be massive for Liam Cahill to actually get a victory in Parky Quay. But I still think Limerick are going to be ahead of them, and I take Limerick to win this one.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that, Tomás, just very briefly. Like, the last day out, I know Tipperary may have been under strength, but they conceded 221 against Westmeath. And that wouldn't augur well for their defensive capacity to withstand what Limerick will throw at them this weekend. And like that, I would expect Limerick to win it and win it by a bit, even though, as you say, there is that traditional rivalry and, in inverted commas, hatred between the two teams in a hurling context.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I suppose Martin, you mentioned what they conceded, which is true. But they also scored 325, you know, so they have a lot of firepower as well.
They have, look, Tip have always been, you know, I mean, you take Tip and Kilkenny, of all of them, right? I mean, when it comes to the frontal side of things in terms of forward play, I mean, they're great guys to get goals, great guys to score, create goal scoring chances. They always give the ball to a man in a better position. They always, when they go through and it's two versus one, you're going to get the ball, and they will take a goal opportunity at every chance. But yeah, Martin is right. They have conceded a lot, right? And that would be a concern in terms of his defensive six, in terms of going into championship as well, because you won't get away with that in championship. You're conceding that many scores, that won't. And it will be a big test against Limerick. And then, I suppose, finally, Michael, you have Waterford v Wexford again. And look, do we really know where Davies is at? Does Davy know where he's at himself? I don't know, to be honest with you. The only thing you're reading about it and you're holding on in terms of he's down 12 or 13 of his team. They reckon he won't be as badly hampered as he was last year in terms of injury, that he's getting the timing right, that all of these guys will be back for championship. But the one negative to that, those guys need to play a couple of matches before you go into the battle of a Munster campaign without playing a big competitive match. So he'd be anxious to try and get some of those back again, like not having Tadhg na Bóirce and guys like that. You know, it's, and you know, kind of Prunty, and you know, that they're, these guys, you need one or two matches before championship to actually get yourself into the match fitness side of things. You can do all the gym work, you can do all the training, but you've got to get the match fitness right before you go into this Munster championship again. So we can say they're missing 12 or 13. The sooner he gets them back, I'm sure the better for himself. And obviously, Keith Rex, Rossiter, Wexford, look, they'll be buoyed by the couple of performances of the last day. What he's got in them is a team that never gives up, because in one or two of the matches, they look to be kind of gone. They'd been buried and they came back very, very, very strong as well. So, and again, a nice little kind of local derby there with the two Ws, Waterford and Wexford.
Absolutely, 100%. Lads, before we leave, I just want to make a mention. Martin, we lost during the week one of the great McCartan families from County Down, of course.
Yes, Dan McCartan passed away during the week. I had the privilege of playing with him and against him, actually. I remember playing against him in an Ulster final of 1974. But younger listeners in particular mightn't appreciate what the Down team of 60 and 61 brought to Gaelic football. I mean, first of all, they wore black togs, Michael, and black togs at the time. Yeah. I remember that was kind of anathema, and they introduced that style. They played in a stylish way. They had Sean O'Neill, for example, and Joe Lennon, who were wonderful footballers, Paddy Doherty. But at fullback, they had this guy. He was only 19 in 1960, a fellow called Dan McCartan. And he was a remarkable fella in many ways, that he was from, I read a book over the Christmas called Dirty Linen, and it was about the Murgle Triangle in Armagh Down. And Dan McCartan was brought up in that environment. He went to a Protestant national school, and throughout his life, you know, growing up, he would have, he would have, shall we say, endured quite a bit of sectarianism. But he got through all of that. He qualified as a dentist. But by God, when he went on the field, he was one hell of a player. And, you know, Son Mark, I think it was on the Down paddle in 1991 when they won in All-Ireland, as his nephew James was as well. But again, younger listeners wouldn't realise that Down team, to this day even, they brought a record crowd to the All-Ireland final in 1961 when they beat Offaly. And I think there was an excess of, imagine it, 90,000 which is remarkable. But to the McCartan family, we'd extend our sympathies, and certainly lost one hell of a footballer and one hell of a man.
We did indeed. And thank you, Martin, for that reflection. Lads, great to talk to you again, as usual. And we'll talk to you in a week's time. where we throw it all back into the pot again, give it a stir and see what comes out.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.